Joel, how you doing, man? Joel, you up? Can you hear me?
Hey Bob, hi everybody.
Yeah, hey guys. Hey Joel, how you doing, man?
All right. I'm actually on my zonal, north southeast zonal forum at the same time on my other computer.
That sounds like a juggling act.
Yep.
So what do you think of the presentation last night? I seen you on the history of NA.
It was awesome. I thought it was great.
Those guys did the presentation, and I go to a sponsorship retreat in Michigan every year, and those guys have done the presentation a couple times. And I think they're somehow connected with our sponsorship family. It's a hell of a presentation, and they're really interesting guys to talk to, too.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. So we're all going to be learning about this as we go along.
So,
all right, well, thank you.
So how's your day going, man?
Well, good. I had an 8 o'clock in the morning massage, got back, got on the zonal forum, and now I'm here to sort of open up this meeting, this workshop, and then I'm back in the zonal forum. It's a busy week.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but it sounds like you started off the day the right way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right on, man.
He has written up a report, and it would take me a minute to read it.
I'll be back in a minute, excuse me.
Along with many more.
Colin, are you there?
Still need to work on communication skills in regards to the disabled. NA service relies heavily.
Hey, Joel.
Hey, Joey.
Colin is a little tied up right now, so I go ahead and open it for him.
Okay, so you're going to open it. You don't need me to do the openings and stuff. I was just coming over to check and make sure.
No. I can take care of it. We're not doing any readings, are we?
No, I mean, yesterday I did open up a couple of them with the, moment of silence and the serenity prayer, but it's not necessary. This is a workshop. It's not a meeting.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So then if you need me, you can always text me or something. I'm going back into the Southeast Zonal Forum.
All right. Thank you.
Guys, have a good workshop.
Thank you.
Got it.
Let's see. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Joey, and I am an addict. I am still fulfilling some obligations in the capacity of the Florida Regional HNI coordinator. So this workshop is going to be explained as the differences between HNI and its function in facilities, as well as behind the walls and corrections, and what the key differences are, because I know that there can be some confusion as far as what the roles of each some subcommittee will do. So we do have some speakers, but before I introduce anybody, let's go ahead and just pause and take a moment of silence for the Serenity Prayer and open it up. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, I am kind of, I'll be honest, I'm kind of unsure who is speaking for Colin, but I have invited Brian C. from the Orlando area. I invited Brian because when I was starting HNI, he was the current chair. So I got a lot from him when he was fulfilling his obligations in that capacity. So I would like to pass the floor over to Brian just to talk a bit about his role with HNI and what he knows about it, his experience and whatnot. And I will go ahead and give it to you, Brian.
All right. Thanks, Joey. Good morning, everyone. I'm honored and privileged to be able to speak to y'all about HNI and what my experience was through HNI. And, you know, I think it goes all the way back to, you know, when I was in treatment. And the treatment center I went to had a meeting, was brought in every night, you know, around 7 o'clock. And some of them were the other fellowship, and three or four of them were Narcotics Anonymous. And I always got something from when these people came in and shared their experience, strength, and hope with us. And, you know, I always told myself, like, I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be that person that brought meetings in and shared hope, especially hope with, you know, the addicts, the recovering addicts that are still new and in treatment, and, you know, letting people know that it is possible to stay clean, no matter what. So it took me a little while. I mean, I got out of treatment, and, I was in the other fellowship for a couple of years, and finally, was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, and I fell in love, and, you know, did all the, you know, what they wanted to do, you know, get a sponsor, work steps. And then I had an opportunity. Someone asked me if I wanted to come to an HNI subcommittee meeting, and I didn't really know what HNI stood for. And I really didn't know before I showed up to the meeting, but that these were the people that were bringing meetings into facilities. So I showed up and I was like, man, this is pretty neat. You know, I get to, you know, I had to do all the qualifications, I guess, or the requirements, you know, go to 2 subcommittee meetings, shadow somebody for 4 meetings. And, eventually I was able to start bringing my own meeting. And when I did, it was like nothing I'd ever experienced in my recovery up to that point. You know, bringing an HNI meeting into a facility, and being able to talk to those people, about my recovery and about other people's recovery, is pretty awesome. And then also to be able to kind of get a reminder, right? If you walk into a treatment facility, and, you know, the one I started with was a detox. So half the people in there were, you know, drooling all over themselves. And it really just kind of brought me back to where I was and where I didn't want to be again. So it was a reminder of, like, if I make one bad decision, like, I could be back in that spot. So for me, again, it was a reminder. And as I progressed in my career, if you want to call it that, in hospitals and institutions, I think within 6 months, the chair had asked me, because we didn't have a vice chair. He asked me if I wanted to be his vice chair. So I said, okay. I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I guess I can try it. So I was kind of nervous. I hadn't really had a position of service of this magnitude up to that point in my recovery. So, you know, I said, why not? You know, what have I got to lose? So I stepped into the vice chair position. I did that for a year, kind of got used to going to area business and really learning the other side of what H&I is and how to coordinate things and order literature and, you know, dealing with principles before personalities, I think is what one of the biggest things I learned between being a vice chair and chair, especially as a chair, there's, you know, it never fails that, you know, there's different personalities that come to meetings and you have to, you know, be able to empathize and understand with certain people and then be able to keep the meeting on track. And I wasn't perfect at it, but I learned a lot throughout my recovery on how to deal with certain people. So I was really able to, you know, keep the meetings to the point, you know, get business done. You know, we started to grow. We started bringing more meetings into facilities and really just getting the word out there. And more people started showing up to our subcommittee meetings. And, you know, I was pretty excited about it. So I didn't realize when I first came to H&I of what it entailed and what really went into it. I thought it was just people bringing meetings, but it's more than that. It's, you know, you have a literature distributor that orders literature and then distributes it to people. And then, you know, as the chair, you're responsible for paying your rent and all this other stuff and coordinating the meeting and meeting lists and open facilities. So there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of key players in the subcommittee. And I feel like everything I've learned in my recovery, everything that I learned throughout my tenure as vice chair, chair of Narcotics Anonymous, or I'm sorry, of H&I, allowed me to not only be successful in recovery, but be successful in my personal life, my professional career, and again, being able to manage people and deal with different personalities without, you know, reacting. And another thing that H&I has helped me to do is be able to speak in front of people, because I was deathly afraid of getting up and talking to people. But I feel like after a while of bringing meetings in and talking to people and just kind of speaking my truth, you know, it's helped me in every aspect of my life. So I can't say enough about what H&I does and what we continue to do, because we are really the front line for the people that are in the rooms that are in the rehab centers or the hospitals that have never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, if you plant the seed, you've done your job. You know, I can't save everybody in a rehab, but if I can plant the seed and somebody, you know, maybe not right away, but eventually goes to a meeting and remembers, you know, someone like me or Joey or whoever does H&I coming in and talking and like, oh yeah, this is how I'm feeling. This is what I need to do. And I'll end with this, but the one of the most gratifying things I ever had was, you know, I went and shared my story at the detox, and about 6 months later, I was speaking at our area convention. And after I was done speaking, this girl came up to me and she's like, just so you know, I heard you speak at my detox, you know, 6 months ago. And it was because of your story that I've stayed clean and continue to stay clean. I just want to thank you. And, you know, that to me is, you know, a God moment, right? Or a higher power, whoever you want to call it. And it's stuff like that that helps me stay clean. Create the message to the next addict who's sick and suffering is, in my opinion, is wouldn't stop doing it for anything. So I hope that's what you're looking for, Joey. I'm not quite sure, but that's all I got. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Brian. I really appreciate it. So, let's see. Who do we have next under Colin speakers? Anybody? Is any of call-in speakers here? Barstow. Hold on 1 second.
Hey, Joey, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Good.
Yeah, I'm having technical difficulties. I don't know how to work this thing.
It's all good.
Well, Joey, I'm Bar. So just share on my testimony with H&I and Corrections.
Yes. You know, and what you have realized. I don't really know your background, but whatever you realized, each individual thing did, and what the key differences that you felt were.
Okay, well, we'll start with Bob Barton. I'm an addict. My experience with H&I, when I went to, kind of similar to Brian, you know, my experience with being in detox and seeing guys come in, just like Brian said, at 7 o'clock at night or the men's meeting was real important to me on Saturday mornings. They would come in and just the hope that they would carry. And these guys were like clean cut. You know, I'm run down and I didn't feel well. And I didn't think there was any hope in sight. I didn't think there was any way out. And these guys would come in, dress nice, you know, had jobs, you know, didn't smell like crap, you know. And I was in that spot in my life where I needed to see some people that were doing life on another side where they had the ability to function. And when these guys came in, it showed me that I too could do this if I just put my first foot forward. My biggest part is pretty much on the correction side. I did 5 years in Florida State Prison. And what was huge to me was being able to go there twice a week when there's endless and countless amounts of drugs and homemade things around you, just like on the street, but there's no consequences when you're in jail, you know? So it's a lot easier just to say, hey, I'm going to get high, or hey, I'm going to get drunk, because there's no consequences. You know, on the street, there's slight consequences. You know, you could get in trouble by the police, but the police in prison, they don't care. So in corrections, I could get out, and these guys were bringing in meetings, and it opened my eyes again. And like the fellow addict said before me, the seed that was planted again, because that was my second time around, it gave me an opportunity to open my eyes. And I had brought meetings in prior on my first bout within the other fellowship. I brought meetings into correctional facilities and hospitals and institutions. And when you go in there, you don't feel like, I didn't feel like I was getting across to anybody. But like the fellow addict said, when that person walks up to you and sees you a year or two later and says, hey, didn't I see you in a meeting when I was locked up, or didn't I see you in that detox? And it merely makes you feel good, you know, that possibly you've reached out and you've shared something with somebody else that gave them hope and strength to make it through another day clean. My biggest thing in corrections for like opportunity wise was when I went in, I got a chance to see myself on that side of how they felt, you know. And it takes I had to watch what I said, because you can't, it's hard to get across to somebody the way you can get across in a meeting when you share your experience. Because when I was locked up, it felt like it felt like I didn't have any hope. And where was it going with that? So the guys that would come in to the corrections, they really helped me out. But it felt like when I would go to these meetings, it would open me up so that I'd pick up my literature and I'd read my literature, and these guys would give me ideas so that I could go back to my dorm and I could sit and I could think about the things that I wanted out of life. And the corrections and where I was at in the meetings we had, they were obviously an hour long, but these guys stayed for about an hour and a half. And the meeting after the meeting was the best part, because then I could talk to these guys about how I was feeling. And it was very important to me to, you know, because obviously they can't sponsor you or anything. They're told not to do that. And it's kind of hard because you can't call them, but we could share with them when they come in. And it was the same guys usually that would come in. it really gave me an opportunity to let go and talk about the things that were bothering me, and to share what was going on inside of me. And I had never, I'd never really opened up before. You know, my first bout, my first round of recovery, I was in the other fellowship, and I went about a little over 5 years. And then I fell pretty hard. But I don't think I was completely honest the whole time. These guys gave me an opportunity to be honest. And it was just that, that happy face, that face that would come in and it would give me unbelievable amounts of hope, you know? But I think the problem is now is the we can't get enough guys to get into the prisons because this, the guidelines are so strict. Like I'm a felon, but I have things that I can help people out with that I know that I can help guys out with that are in prison that they're guys that are bringing them in there because the guys that were coming in to see us, these guys had never even been to prison before, but yet that didn't matter to me because they were helping me, they were sharing their experience, strength, and hope. But I think if we could probably, I don't know, somehow come up with an idea that could get guys into prisons that have been to prison, have done that, have been behind on both sides, then it would really help out. I don't really have much more to experience on that. My experience on that it opened me up to be able to have that hope, you know, like the addict said before me, the hope that it gave me to see people on both sides. It was just amazing. It really helped me out. I'm not sure what else you're looking for, Joey, but.
Thank you, Bart. I appreciate it.
Joey, I'd like to share a few things, if that's possible.
Yeah, please.
I'm an addict named Colin.
Hey, Colin.
So currently I'm serving as the corrections resource coordinator for the Florida region of Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, what Bart said is a challenge that we run into typically is, you know, it's not uncommon for us to submit someone's paperwork to get approved and then get denied. And then, you know, what I tell guys that get denied is that, you know, let's wait 6 or 8 months and then try again. Because, you know, what I've learned in my recovery is that persistence comes through eventually. I just have to keep doing the footwork. And sometimes that's a long time. It took me 3 times to get cleared at the local jail, even though I was cleared, you know, the first time at behind the walls in the Florida DOC. And so one of the things I wanted to bring up, though, is one of the other struggles that we're having a large struggle with right now is guys that have been cleared to take meetings behind the walls that are no longer able to because of their, because of the COVID stuff. You know, they're obviously don't want to get their family members or their elderly parents infected. And so, you know, hopefully with these vaccines that are coming out and people are able to get them, we'll see a resurgence of volunteers. But right now the volunteer pool has really dwindled. So if there's anyone on this call today that's interested in doing work behind the walls, please, you know, message me and, I can get you the forms to get cleared with the Florida DOC. Thanks.
Thanks, Colin. So let's see. Do we have anyone else, Colin? Didn't you say that Chris?
Chris, are you in a place where you can actually share some of your experience, strength, and hope? I think Chris may be at work today, so he's not, I don't know if.
Hey, Colin, I'm sorry.
Hey, Chris.
I had you muted and had it in my pocket. I'm Chris, I'm an addict.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, so my experience with Behind the Walls and the differences between Behind the Walls and H&I is mainly, for me, I have been in both situations where I was an addict trying to get clean in a rehab or detox, and I have been an addict behind the walls of a prison. And the main difference for me is in the detox and in the treatment facility, the Narcotics Anonymous message was brought to me and taught me about what Narcotics Anonymous was. And in prison, I found doing service work in there, a lot of the gentlemen in the prisons that I've gone to, a lot of the addicts that I've been able and privileged to serve already knew about Narcotics Anonymous. They just simply needed a meeting. I don't know if that's something that you just said, if I'm just echoing and piggybacking what you said, Colin. You know, they needed the ability to have a meeting, and they can't congregate necessarily where a bunch of addicts get together, or a bunch of quote unquote inmates or prisoners can't get together and congregate without either a without either a corrections officer or some outside person from the free world with them attending. So there are very strict rules in the Florida Department of Corrections about who can and who cannot attend. There are some yearly qualifications you have to meet to continue. Main thing, we don't give our address, our phone number. We don't write. We don't sponsor men. I can only speak for men, obviously, because I am one, and that's the only addicts behind the walls I've served. I think that's actually the same with H&I. We don't give our address. We don't give our phone number. I don't know if there's, I've been on H&I. I was on H&I years ago, and I don't remember if we're allowed to sponsor or not, but writing addicts behind the walls at the prison that we serve is strictly forbidden. It's against the rules. We can compromise our principles if we're not careful. And you know, addicts behind the walls are still addicts, and we're a manipulative bunch. And so my experience has been to just go in there and allow them to have a meeting, share when I'm able to share. And the best part of behind the walls for me was riding to the meetings with Rick B, with Colin, with Guy, with other men that I've gotten close with in the rooms, and having the meeting before the meeting. That's my own experience. It has nothing to do with the differences. I believe that's the same throughout Narcotics Anonymous. The ability to socialize with other men and get real and talk about real things is what has kept me coming back. Can't say that I went to any NA meetings while I was in prison, but having taken meetings into other men, it is what really makes their week. It fills their sails, and it fills mine as well, to be able to serve in that capacity. It is my favorite form of service, hands down, and I look forward to getting back to it when my schedule and COVID permit. I'm just grateful to be here and to be in recovery with you guys, and for any professionals that have any other questions, I'm free to talk about this at a later moment. And I'm willing to take questions now, as a matter of fact. I'm also under a dash trying to check fuses while I share my experience, strength, and hope. So this is me trying to multitask. I hope it came out clearly. If not, well, you can't really fire me because I'm a trusted servant. I don't get paid. Thank you.
Hey, Chris, I do actually have a question.
Go for it.
One thing from years ago, that one of the key differences between H&I and corrections itself is their format, I guess you could say, being that H&I strictly, you know, we bring meetings into facilities where the clientele just cannot leave. They don't have access to outside meetings. And behind the walls, more or less, they allow their
seats
or whatnot to run their own meeting. Like it's their own, yeah. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, the common thing, you know, the similarities, not the differences, is neither population are able to get out to a meeting. So, but also, yes, the addicts behind the walls run their own meeting. They have their own home group. They make their own votes. They choose their own. It is a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It is behind the walls. It is not open to the public. It is only open to other others outside the walls who have the proper passes, you know, a visitor's pass and such to go in. I can't just show up at the prison and say, hey, I'm going to bring a meeting. You know, there are rules to follow. We have a strict schedule. And I think that is, I think that's it. Yeah, that's the big difference. One of the big differences.
Cool. Thank you. I just wanted to confirm that.
Appreciate you pointing that out. Yeah, the Addicts Behind the Walls run their own show. You know, it's their meeting. I'm just another, you know, addict in attendance.
Cool. Thank you so much, Chris. Does anybody else have any other questions for Chris?
Yes, well, missing him.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for letting me serve. Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Chris.
And I this is addict named Colin. One of the things that Chris reminded me of that was really impacting to me is when we were building one of the meetings at Madison, you know, basically what we do is we come in there with some formats and we say, hey, this is your meeting. I mean, we typically started with, we had a few meetings first when we first got introduced to the facility. But then after that, we were like, okay, well, we need to, you know, build this as your own meeting. So we're going to spend one of our sessions talking about what you guys want, what readings you want, how you want the reading, you know, the format to go, and what you want your group name to be. And the light in the eyes of the addicts that were at that meeting of like, this is ours. We can control this. It's not something that the guards are telling us to do or you're telling us to do. And this is for us. I mean, that just like totally, there was like gasoline on the fire. It was just so powerful to see those guys just take to that, like just amazingly. And that really, I mean, I would remember that forever. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Colin. Hey, Colin, did you have any other speakers or was that all that
you had? No, that's it. My other speakers were unable to make it.
Is there any particular way in which you would like to proceed from now?
We can open it up for sharing from anyone else that has experience with Behind the Walls or H&I service if they'd like to add to the conversation.
I've got a question, Colin.
Shoot.
My name's Roger from the Suncoast, a.k.a. Sarasota. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. It's good to hear your voice, Roger.
Well, yeah. Question, and it's been asked repeatedly by the county boys because the county, Port Manatee and Sarasota County have reopened. Why are the traditions not read at, haven't done H&I Behind the Walls just because the PIN numbers got messed up years ago, but why are the traditions not read at these? Because these guys are on 1129. They're there for a year. So it's not like a 30-day stint. Any idea?
What's been shared with me, so we read the traditions behind the walls. That's normal that we read the traditions.
Thank God.
And the difference is that the behind the walls meetings are real home groups with a real full meeting format. But H&I meetings are an abbreviated format that doesn't include the traditions. And what we're told is that, what I was told is that, you know, the steps are to keep me clean and the traditions are to keep us clean. And so the traditions are more for the group and for the greater service bodies. Or the lesser service bodies, however you want to say that. So the concept, communicating the concept of the group, when the only group that the person in an H&I facility may know of is their treatment group, is just not something that is
under the purview of H&I.
Well, it's not that it's not under the purview, but I mean, how do you communicate about the power of the group when the group that they are typically in is their therapeutic community group or their treatment center group? I mean, the group that they have a concept of is not the home group. It's not the meeting. It's the group of a bunch of other people in treatment that some of them may want to be there, some may not want to be there. Some of them may be actively, you know, manipulating staff. Some of them, you know, it's just like, it's not, their concept of the group is not going to be the same concept of this as if they were at an actual meeting.
Okay.
So that's what's been communicated to me.
Because for me, the steps have realized that I'm not as great as I think I am. There's something greater than myself. But the traditions, from being exposed to them a few times, taught me how to interact with society. So the steps like gave me a format, and the traditions gave me practical application. So You know, we discuss them at the county jail, because especially at the recovery pod, these guys are there for a year. We discuss them, but I hear that. It's just, you know, I've gotten feedback that, well, it's because it's in the, you know, world H&I guide. And I'm like, I don't have to accept that all the time. Traditions have been a big solution on how to work with society. Take what I've learned from the steps and apply it to society. So I just wondered what your feedback on what your thoughts on it. And I could wrap my head around what you said. So thank you.
I mean, anybody else have some? The last thing I want to say about that is that I'm a very strong believer in autonomy. And so if your H&I group believes that you need to read the traditions and vote on it, read the traditions.
Because it does say that in the guide, like, let your local area, this is just, they're very crystal clear that this is just a guide. You know, if your area feels differently, to discuss it. So thank you for pointing that out. You're the man.
Yep. I'm Mike. I'm an addict. I live down in Marathon, Florida. We do have a guidance clinic down here that has an inpatient detox unit. I'll be brief in my history. I'm about to go in there as a behavioral health tech into the inpatient detox unit. I'm working with, there's a couple members here locally that are an H&I subcommittee. They're all kind of on hold for both H&I and corrections because of COVID. But they've got all their paperwork ready to go. So I'm kind of in a unique situation in that I'm going to a facility that doesn't really have any meetings. There is one other tech in there who's kind of doing some impromptu meetings for the other fellowship, only because she's recovering in that regard. And it's the same with me. I'm recovering. In terms of being an old timer, I'm not, you know, and so I may end up having to do, or actually I want to do some impromptu NA meetings in the same light. I certainly understand the previous addicts share that these folks are in anywhere from a week to a month, and how much can you really get under their belt in that amount of time, and you don't want to overwhelm them. And I can understand why we may not want to do the traditions. It's about all you can do to get through steps 1 through 3. With those folks. And so I guess I'm looking for some insight of just trying to, I guess it would be starting a new meeting. And in particular, I have gone to some meetings with another fellowship in the same building in the past. The one things I remember was a lot of crosstalk. So I don't know how you work on the leniency of crosstalk with folks that aren't really necessarily there as members, but to learn how to become members. And just some other tidbits that you might be able to share where I may be the only person in there helping to facilitate the meeting. Thanks for letting me share.
So let me get this straight. You're telling me that your local area's H&I are kind of like on pause, right?
That's correct. So nobody's going into any facilities right at this time, but I'm going to be in a unique position that I'm going to be employed by the facility. And it sounds like they're going to pretty much give me, in what conversations I've had, they're going to give me free rein to conduct the meeting, because I'm already going to be in there and qualified.
My concern with that, I guess, would just be do you feel like there would be like a conflict of interest as an employee while also conducting, you know, NA related things?
I would say no, only because there are things I can't do with them out in the community as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
I can't approach them unless they approach me. I can't be a sponsor. I can't be doing sorts of things that would reflect on the facility itself. So there are some things I cannot do.
Addict named Colin, I think it would be best to take that specific scenario to your local H&I committee. Even if they're not bringing in meetings, they may have an opinion on how that's done. I know for me, I would vote against what you're proposing at my H&I subcommittee for the sole purpose of that, regardless of your intentions and your ability to be impartial, the patients in the insanity that I was at when I was in the several treatment centers I went to are not, I wasn't able to separate someone coming in, taking a meeting in versus someone coming in that was staff. And for me, it was always an, it was always a me versus them, oppositionally defiant kind of scenario. And it would have prevented me from hearing the message because I would have thought that you're looking for me to do something wrong. So that's my two cents. Thanks.
Hey, Richard, I see you have your hand up.
Hi, Richard Addict. I have a question regarding, as far as the differences between corrections and H&I. Could someone define, say, what services and direction the corrections coordinator provides to the areas as opposed to the, what the H&I coordinator provides to the areas?
I'm an addict, and Colin, I can speak on the corrections coordinator side of things. So what the corrections coordinator provides to areas is a connection to, a facilitated connection to the state DOC and federal DOC systems. So most areas, not all areas, but most areas do not have service to the local prisons, the prisons in their area, the state prisons in their area. But most areas in Florida, at least the ones that I'm aware of, most areas do to local jails. And so that's where the, like, the kind of defining line is that H&I typically handles jails and treatment centers and institutions like that, hospitals. Detox centers is H&I also. And whereas corrections handles federal and state facilities, at least in the Florida region. And so what I do is I provide access to the wardens, access to the state DOC system to be able to get guys cleared. And I can get women cleared too, but obviously I wouldn't be going in or behind the walls to a female facility personally. So we do have a few female servants and they kind of handle that stuff themselves. But as far as getting cleared, I provide the forms, they provide the information, and then I facilitate that with the facility and with the state system.
Thanks, Colin. And as far as the H&I resource coordinator goes, my job details included anything from ordering literature to like struggling areas and struggling facilities, which actually was probably the most common thing that I had to work with. And then another common thing was the area's chairs would reach out regarding some issues at their local level, whether it's how do we deal with a a combative member, or how do I reach this person? How do I communicate more effectively? There was a multitude of different of reasons that anybody could reach out to me for. And my job was simply to just be a resource to anybody and make myself available. Learning days were a common thing. Unfortunately, due to COVID, a lot of the areas have struggled with bringing, presentations into facilities. A lot of facilities don't have the Zoom, there's HIPAA compliance issues. So pretty much a lot of areas have been on hold since last year. If that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And then Bart?
Hey, Joey.
Hey, Bart.
Hey, I was listening to you guys talk, and I really wanted to make it a point to because I was just thinking about when I was behind the fence and behind the wall, and these guys were bringing in the meetings, and I know we're talking about how getting guys in and filling out the forms and whatnot. I would like to just emphasize on how big of a responsibility when you fill that form out, how big of a responsibility it is to follow through and bring these meetings in, not just fill the form out and forget about it, but it's a really big responsibility. Because I remember when I was there, I really needed these guys to come in and have this meeting. Because yes, Chris is absolutely correct. We did run our own meetings. We did have all of our own literature there, which those guys did bring in other literature for us, you know, the new book, new pamphlets and new books and whatnot. But it was very important, because we in the behind the wall, you cannot have a meeting unless there is an outside person present. The guards where I was at did not allow that. So it was very, very important that these guys showed up, or else we didn't have a meeting. So I just want to emphasize the responsibility that's behind getting involved in the corrections and filling out that form and being accepted to go into the prison. Because these guys that are behind the wall, these guys that are going to these meetings, these guys that are trying to learn about recovery or trying to stay clean are looking for us. I mean, they are betting that we're going to be there on that day. And I can't emphasize more about how much that meant to me, or how much it really hurt me when we couldn't have a meeting.
Thanks, Bart. Let's see. Does anybody else have their hand up? No, that's still Bart. Okay. Did anybody else have any other questions or anything that they wanted to add about their experience with H&I or corrections behind the walls? Or any questions about either of those?
I'm Mike. I'm an addict.
Mike.
I don't know how to raise my hand on this thing, so I'm just going to have to say, just talk. I just want to make sure I understand Colin's point of view. I just want to clarify that as an employee, these folks aren't going to be required to come and see me. It would be totally voluntary if they feel like coming. You know, I would just say, hey, and I wouldn't be working full time. It would just be me showing up and just mentioning some guys, say, hey, I'll conduct a meeting if you guys want to conduct a meeting. Anybody feel like conducting a meeting? And we'd go and have one. It's not going to be like it's a scheduled meeting or anything like that. So I'm just trying to get a feel for the appropriateness of even having the meeting, I guess. And I'm just looking for a little more clarity.
I'm
an addict named Colin.
Oh,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, so as far as like an H&I, like a local area, let me correct that. When I was familiar with the Orlando area's H&I policy, you know, we would consider that as a rogue meeting or a renegade meeting, just because it's not particularly affiliated with, you know, H&I and the subcommittee. You know, you weren't nominated or voted into a specific facility. And as a result, what we've learned through our time of conducting presentations is that if we can't be held responsible for that. So, you know, typically in an event like that, where somebody might, bring a meeting in or a presentation in that is outside of the H&I subcommittee's capacity, I mean, it happens all the time, regardless of if it's a rogue meeting or not. Facilities might take a particular liking to a particular client. And that's okay. And they might say, hey, you know, we would like you to bring a presentation or start a meeting or whatever, but it just can't be affiliated with H&I if you weren't, you know, properly voted in by group conscious, just because it has oftentimes become, you know, a liability, whether somebody doesn't show up. I know that you would be working part-time. But I mean, the facility that I went to personally, you know, we had staff members running their own version of a group. It wasn't necessarily an NA meeting. I guess you could say it was like a hybrid of sorts, you know, talking about NA and, or at least, their personal experiences with NA or AA or whatever the case might be, just so that liability is not there. Because ultimately, like when somebody brings a presentation to a facility, we know that we don't speak for NA, but the staff members might, you know, associate that person with NA or the H&I subcommittee as a whole. So that's just, you know, as far as like a local level, that's what we found to be, you know, true.
I just need to further clarify that the local H&I, which again, we're down here in the Florida Keys, we are not that big of an area compared right. to some of you all. They are well aware of my position, and they are, you know, there hasn't been any formal vote, but it's only two or three people that are the committee. They're well aware and they have welcomed it. Mm. So I don't know if that's the issue of whether or not they endorse. They do endorse. I'm just trying to figure out the appropriate way to conduct the format of the meeting. And I understand it's not going to be like I'm going to be there every Wednesday unless mm-hmm. I tell the people I'm going to work for that I want to work every Wednesday. But I'm going in as a per diem employee, so my schedule is going to be changing from time to time. So really, they understand my position. They understand that I'm probably going to be the first person in the entire Keys that's going to be able to get into an H&I in situation. The rest of them are wanting to. I'll just be the first one right now. So from that regard, I was trying to get a little more info about how folks do an H&I meeting. How does that differ from corrections? How does that differ from a regular on the street meeting? Mm. Thanks for letting me share.
Colin?
I'm an addict named Colin. I think that if you've got support from your H&I committee already, and you're the first person member that's getting this opportunity to do something like this, I think it would just be so beneficial to ask them to vote and make it formal so that the other areas that may have the opportunity to do something like
I think we lost you, Colin. I didn't hear the last 30 seconds, but let's assume I get a formal vote. Okay. I haven't done that, but let's assume that happens and I've got their endorsement. Now, where do I go? Let's go back to my other questions of how does it differ from corrections? What has been your experience as a group out there? What's been your experience with H&I? What have been problems you've seen in meetings that you've had to deal with, and what's worked?
Well,
can I address that, Joey?
Yeah, for sure.
Roger, Attic. Mike, Roger. Admire what you do in Sarasota. We have the detoxes and stuff like that. We've gone through this in a couple different scenarios. So what I admire, you know, like what you want to do is noble. And I agree with you 100%. We had a guy that was 25 plus years and we put the old timers on a pedestal. And we found out that as a per diem employee, there was, like Colin had said, there was preferential treatment from then, even though you go in pure. And it was approved type of thing with H&I. Here, H&I, you know, the jails is just a subset of our H&I. So the H&I format is the same. And that's just how it works here. So this guy went in alone. And what we learned by getting our asses kicked, if you have the ability on a per diem, like those other two or three people, do you have the ability to call, like, let's say I'm one of the three people, hey, Roger, what are you doing Tuesday at 12 o'clock? Because that's the time that you're slotted to, you know, to do it. If you can go, we found it was more successful. If you went in with somebody else, it removes you from all this pressure. And they're looking at you as an employee, whether it's per diem or not. They don't know what per diem, they probably couldn't even spell per diem. But if you had the opportunity to bring somebody else in, we used the World H&I book just as a format to do so. Didn't bring key tags in. We didn't read the 12 traditions and we didn't pass around the 7 tradition basket. And it's just a presentation of H&I. What we found successful is like the cross-talking, like let's talk about, for lack of a better format, you know, you're doing step one. It's step one in a detox type of thing. And you could spend the next 12 years of your clean time just talking about step one because they're cycling in and out. But we talked about cross-talking, side conversations, like quote unquote meeting etiquette, because there's going to be some people in that facility that have experienced a 12-step fellowship, and a fellowship of a principal's a principal type of thing. But we found that our asses got covered a lot safer when we didn't go in alone. Because that first guy actually wound up getting terminated from the preferential treatment. And he was exactly like you. Like, dude, I just, you know, want to bring a message of recovery that, you know, you can live a different way of life. But they viewed it differently. So I don't know if that helped or not, but don't go alone, brother.
I see your point. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I will also add to that a little bit, in, as far as your question, Mike, as to, you know, like with smaller meetings in general, and not even just limited to what you had asked, Mike, but, you know, anybody else that might have some confusion, there are, you know, we had kind of discussed the guidelines. And I do want to add, because I do remember doing my my workshop a couple of years ago, and I remember the guidelines got brought up and somebody had mentioned, you know, they're not the end all be all, and 100% right. You know, the guidelines are not rules. So you do not have to, you know, go by them, but they are, you know, great suggestions, and it's a great format to go by. You know, it definitely doesn't have every answer in there, and it doesn't have any answers to like, well, oh, what happens in this scenario, you know, experience is the best teacher sometimes. But I will say that there are some great suggestions for formats. You know, like we classify things like a short-term facility is anywhere between, I think it's less than 29 days is a short-term, and then anything over that is considered long-term. So, you know, there's different formats that work better for different size groups and different length of stays, whether it's like a bringing a speaker presentation in, you know, just sharing your story and your experience in NA, HNI, whatnot. Or you can do multiple people, you know, and have like a panel type of format, like a Q&A. And those are really ideal for keeping, you know, people in a short-term facility's attention span longer, you know, cause you have a more variety and you have, you can get them to engage. And then as far as like crosstalking goes, I really think that it just depends on, for me, at least it depended on my personal recovery, you know, and how willing to be assertive can I be, you know. Like, can I be assertive in this situation and stop this crosstalk? Because in my time, whether it's as the HNI chair or it's as a panel leader, you know, there will always be somebody that's going to interrupt or a crosstalk or try and have a side conversation or something. And ultimately, as the meeting's host, it is my responsibility to, you know, get that under control. So, and there's ways to do that, you know, love without disrespecting somebody, but, you know, just emphasizing that part of sharing is also the sharing of time. So I hope that answers a little more of your question.
Thank you, Joey, for sure.
Absolutely. Does anybody else have any other things that they wanted to add? Yes, Wes?
I'm an addict. My name is Wes.
Hi, Wes.
Thank you, Joey, for sharing that. One of the things that I've found in the years I've been in H&I is that those people are having meetings all day before we ever get there. And they're talking to each other and cross-talking and fixing each other and telling each other. And you have to really start in the beginning explaining that this is an H&I meeting, Narcotics Anonymous H&I meeting. And that, you know, it's a little different format, a little different setup. And so let's try to respect the, you know, the fact that, you know, this is a different meeting than your normal meetings that you've had all day. That always helped me, because they're like Joey said, there's always a group of people who are, you know, want to be there for the wrong reason. And that's okay. And I tell you, when I do H&I in a facility, even in the jail, first thing I ask is how many people in here have been to a NA meeting? And, you know, 75% of the people raise their hand. So, you know, we're not talking to, you know, very many new people. We're just talking to people who happen to be either behind the walls or in treatment again. So they know the deal. It's just having them to understand to respect the deal. One of the things I wanted to share with you guys, I don't know if you know it, but if you do H&I behind the walls, the regional service office has these key tags on paper, and you can order these. The facility can order them and have them shipped to them. Because a lot of facilities, you know, especially behind the walls, they won't let us bring things in. We're real lucky here in the Lakeland area, the Heartland area, that they do allow us to bring things in and trust us with that. But you can order those and you don't have to have key tags. You can just, you know, pass out these things. And they're really cool. The guys really like them because they, you know, acknowledge the fact that they have, you know, clean time and that they're celebrated. But I'm glad you guys are here. I'm glad to see this happening. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Wes. Appreciate it.
Name Colin?
Yes.
I'd like to say one last thing. I'm so glad that you brought that up, Wes, because those paper key tags are great in corrections, because obviously they can't have the plastic and metal. You know, I've distributed several hundred of those over the last few years. It really makes a difference to be able to have those for somebody who's behind the walls. Also, I just want to share that, you know, as part of different areas and different H&I subcommittees being autonomous, you know, the area that I'm in, the Uncoast area, voted several years ago to no longer distribute key tags in the H&I meetings due to someone being in, you know, a situation where they can't actually really live life on life's terms in a completely free way. So I just wanted to share that too. But thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Colin. So it would appear that we have 2 minutes left. So we are reaching the end of the hour. Does anybody else have any final comments, questions, concerns? No, guess not. Well, thank you guys so much for attending, and thank you guys who spoke and gave so freely of yourselves throughout the years. Those of you who have been so involved, I really appreciate it. And thank you guys for allowing me to serve and host this meeting.
Thank you, Joey, for sharing. I really appreciate it.
Of course, Colin. Thank you.
Thanks, Joey.
Thanks for your service.
Thank you for your service. Yeah, I took it there due to